Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Victory formation. Mills takes a knee. And the regular season is over. The Texans get their 10th victory. Back to back with 10 wins. D'Amico does it again. 23-14. They beat the Titans to cap the campaign and head for the playoffs.
Yeah, Mark Vandermeer on the call. They are back in the playoffs again, just like last season, 10-7. Feels different, but 10-7, division champions, four seed, 3:30, Saturday. Man, don't tell me the Texans aren't a consistent franchise. Eight times in the playoffs, eight times, 3:30. On Saturday.
Also, I did not fact check this, but it feels right. They've been in the playoffs eight times and in the wild card round, but never as a wild card team. Always as the division winner.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's been a home game every time. Yep.
That's yep. I don't know what that is.
You know what? It's in some years it's a testament to how bad the AFC South is for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and in some years it's a testament to that the Texans have been a good football team, and hopefully they're a good football team over these next few weeks. They are, by the way, welcoming everybody on a Reaction Monday. Texans win yesterday, as you heard Mark Vandermeer say, 23-14. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne, and we are striving 6 days in to be the best in the world.
Yes, that's best in the world.
That's our goal in 2025.
Division champions.
That's a start.
Oh, yeah, okay, we got to be better than that.
That's a start. Right. Yep.
But I'm so happy with these division championships.
I know. We get T-shirts. By the way, you can get your T-shirts at Academy. Ready to roll, it says on it. You know what I learned last night, Seth, watching Dan Campbell's victory speech after the Lions clinched the number one seed? That ready to roll motto that's on the Texans divisional champion T-shirts, I believe that's an NFL thing because it's on the Lions T-shirts as well.
Oh, really?
Either that or the Lions are trying to copy the Texans.
Classic Lions.
Yeah. 15-2 trying to copy the Texans. Yep.
Oh, there were all kinds of crazy stats about that game yesterday. It was the first time in NFL history that a regular season game was played between two teams that had a combined 28 wins.
Oh, yeah.
You remember, like, oh, okay, there's an extra game. So it's a little easier to pull off, but still pretty damn impressive.
Well, the next closest was 25, so they both pulled it off by last week. Yeah. They had played last week, it would have been the most. So that's, yeah. Yeah, that was fun last night. It was fun yesterday, man. It's always fun beating the Titans, especially when Amy Adams gets to cry. I'm assuming she cried after the game. She cried when they won in Week 12. I'm assuming she was sobbing her ass off in Week 18.
I was almost kind of grateful that she's decided to pull off this little shtick every year. in that, all right, it was an emotionally, there's something to get up for maybe a little bit. And as, towards the end of the year, Sean, you might ask, like, okay, well, what do a bunch of guys who aren't from Houston care about whether or not the Titans are wearing the Oilers uniforms? This is the time of year when you're finding stuff to hate the other team for. Mm-hmm. And you can, if a few guys on that team, because there was a certain amount of chippiness, I feel like, okay, you know what? You go in for that. All right. You know, it seems like our owners, at least Hannah McNair, isn't all that happy about this whole scenario. Let's do it for Hannah.
Yeah.
Just, you find anything to latch on to.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
In this world where hate is around every corner, sometimes you still find yourself out of hate towards the end of a season when you're tired.
Sometimes hate is the right potion for what it is you're looking to accomplish. We'll get into exactly what was accomplished yesterday in the next segment. For now, I was watching intently. I was so back and forth on whether I wanted to play the Steelers or the Chargers yesterday afternoon. I don't know where you were on the whole thing.
I wanted the Steelers.
Yeah.
I just the Steelers are,
they're bad
much
right
like
now.
The Texans, they're running on fumes.
Yes.
And Russell Wilson just looks like whatever that little lanyap is that used to take him over the top, that's gone out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, he feels like a deflated, withering balloon of a man. And the Steelers defense isn't as good as they were at the beginning of the year. You could say the same thing about the Chargers, and yet the Chargers have the best scoring defense in the NFL.
Yeah.
So, Harbaugh versus Tomlin, they're both good coaches, but the way that this team, this Chargers team, is constructed, I just think it's a tougher test for the Texans. But it's neither here nor there. Either way, you get a home game, so there you go.
The odds makers agree with you. The Chargers are favored in this game. Chargers are fairly substantial for a wild card team coming into another team's stadium in the playoffs. I mean, a 3-point favorite on the road, and the Chargers are not exactly a team that have draped themselves in glory. I shouldn't say a team. It's a good team. A franchise that's draped themselves in glory in the postseason in the past.
Right. You got all kinds of historical narratives you're running up against here. Chargers constantly have been playoff disappointments, even after their most impressive regular seasons throughout history. That has nothing to do with Jim Harbaugh or anything. And yet, C.J. Stroud has never beaten Jim Harbaugh. So it's...
Yeah, I'd forgotten me. Forgot they were acquainted with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Back
so
in the day.
Nico and CJ will have to do something with a voodoo doll or something to try to just come to terms with that whole part of it.
Yeah. So it'll be Chargers. It'll be Saturday at 3:30. And I'm excited about it, man. We're getting texts in already early in the show here. I'm happy with the performance. As a fan, it gave me some hope.
Yeah. I was actually more excited about the victory than I thought I would be. Now, a part of it is just that the D'Amico's plan and what he wanted to accomplish, although I disagreed with it a little bit, he had a plan. He wanted to get out there. I think he wanted to give the offense especially maybe a little bit more confidence. He wanted to remind the defense what they're capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And on that first drive, for the sixth time all season, they were able to go down and score a touchdown on the opening drive.
That feels like a lot because I lived through the Bill O'Brien era.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, and the Texans have done a good job of scoring on opening drives.
Yeah.
They just haven't necessarily scored a lot of touchdowns on opening
drives. They've scored six touchdowns on opening drives this year?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm not even being snarky or tongue-in-cheek. That feels like more than the entire Bill O'Brien era combined, like in 6 years.
Bill O'Brien was awesome at closing out games in the second half,
yeah.
Whereas Bobby Sloak has usually shown that he shows his best stuff in the first quarter, maybe sometimes in the second quarter, and then falls apart completely in the second half.
Right.
So any of those things that might have plagued this Texans offense, you weren't going to have an opportunity to see. Plenty of excuses abound for why they only scored 16 points in this game on offense. So that went about as well as you could have hoped for, given D'Amico's plan was to try to just maybe inject some confidence and get feeling right going into the playoffs. So that one looked good. I mean, I hated that I was keeping count and that I was very aware of this as soon as Nico Collins caught the touchdown. Nico Collins touched the ball four times on that try.
Yeah, feed him. I like that. If they're going to do that in the playoffs, they should do that.
If you're going to get Nico Collins 48 touches in a game, then so be it. It'll be a performance for the ages, but it wasn't like that drive was one that was textbook. Oh, yeah, They're firing on all cylinders right now.
No, but regardless of who CJ was throwing to, I like the way he threw the football on that drive.
Yes, that was my big takeaway from that, is that, okay, CJ looked decisive. That corner blitz, that, or at least with an unblocked man coming off the edge, he did exactly what he needed to do, threw into the teeth of the blitz, got it to Nico. Luckily, the Titans were too dumb to challenge the fumble, and they kept rolling on. Third and two, they decide to go back shoulder to Nico, and hey, they made it look easy. So there you go. I think getting Nico involved in the shorter part of the game, that's a good thing. I think they need to continue to work on that. But then you get CJ out, he stays healthy, and you're off to the races.
That third and short play that you're talking about with Nico, the one where he went up over the guy and tippy-toed on the sideline, I mean, that was, unless you were going for it on fourth down, that was a bad play call. That was a little similar to the wheel route to Joe Mixon on third and two that they ran. I forget which game. It might have been the Tennessee game, actually. I forget which game it was. But I was kind of hoping that would be incomplete, just to see, like, okay, now let's see what game management looks like on the opening drive. You know, do you throw a low percentage pass like that, knowing that you're going for it on fourth down? Because if I'm not mistaken, after that Mixon third and two wheel route, they punted on fourth and two in that game. I think that was the Titans game, if I remember. It was at home. I remember that. So, but I'm with you, man. Opening drive, and they got him out of there. They didn't leave CJ out there to lose his confidence or get hurt or anything like that.
The riskiest move of the game was DeMeco going into it with that strategy of wanting to get some confidence, because if it hadn't worked out, if, let's say, Dalton Schultz had one of his all too frequent drops this season on that bootleg, or if CJ hadn't been able to connect with Nico on that third and short, and then if you go out there again and you stall out or something, then all of a sudden it becomes you're compounding the bad feelings and the lack of confidence and all of that.
Yep.
So I thought it was the right move just to have that taste of success and then get CJ out of there. They left Laramie in for a lot longer than I thought they would have, and Laramie, to his credit, I think, has really tried to do things the right way in totality in the second half of the season. I mean, he's always been an astoundingly good pass protector. It's the run game and the screens and all of that. I think they've made some progress there. The two false starts, I'm going to just try to chalk off to, like, all right, I know none of the other offensive linemen had an issue with Davis Mills' cadence, but whatever. Laramie's been good when CJ's been in there.
I was ashamed of Ross Tucker trying to make excuses for Laramie Tunsil. And I thought Ross had an A-plus performance yesterday, but he's going, sometimes the cadence changes. I'm like, Ross, you do more research than anybody I know as a color commentator. You know that he's leading the league in these things this year.
I was shocked and astounded at a couple things yesterday, just from response on social media. One was that I pointed out the point I just made that, like, look, I was basically responding to Ross. After the second false start of Laramie's, I said, well, look, if it's only a problem for one guy, then the problem isn't Davis Mills' cadence.
Right.
But I was amazed at how many people were like, hey, man, he's gotten better. And I'm like,
are you talking about Davis?
No. Talking about
Laramie's gotten better.
I'm like, no, he went the month of December without a false start.
Right.
Including in which they had a bye week. Like, that's not...
Well, I mean, technically.
Included with Davis, though, too, people saying, like, wow, Davis had a great game.
That's what I thought you were talking about. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about both of those.
Yeah.
I'm like, how far have our standards fallen that a 50% completion percentage and Laramie only having two false starts in the last 5 weeks
damaged,
is like
man.
A huge jump of progress. I don't get that.
We're damaged. Yeah. Right now. We're damaged by this offense. Yeah. David, someone asked me on Twitter, is this the best game Davis has ever had? I'm like, no. There's a reason he was the starter going into 2022. He was really good the last five games of his rookie year. He had a passer rating of 102 in his last five games of his rookie year. Like, no, it's not even close to the best game he's ever had.
I had to go back and reevaluate it. I had to go back and watch all of Davis Mills' throws because I had all these people saying, wow, Davis looked really good.
He did some nice things, but it was...
He did some nice things, but he was, I mean, the, like, look, and CJ's had games like this year, and I haven't said they were good games. 54.5% completion percentage for 128 yards and no touchdowns? No, that's not a good game.
No.
I'm not crushing him for it or anything. The game was what it was. It was a glorified preseason game.
All right, we're off and running on a reaction Monday. Texans win yesterday, 23-14. We will we'll dig into it. Well, today's Black Monday also. There's already been movement on the coaching front. We'll get to it. If we don't get to that in the next segment, we'll touch on it in headlines. But there was one yesterday that was kind of shocking. But the checklist from yesterday, what exactly did the Texans get accomplished that was on the D'Amico Ryan / Payne and Pendergast checklist? We'll run through it coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Reaction Monday. This feels like the first, it is the first Monday of 2025, but this feels like the everybody's back to work day. A little more traffic out on the roads, more traffic up here at the studios. There's more human beings up here and stuff. So.
Good job, everybody. Way to go back to work in 2025.
Way to go back to work. I mean, Seth and I have been back to work in 2025 since New Year's Day, but that's because we're trying to be the best in the world in 2025.
That's right. That's right. There's no rest. No days off is a slogan I've been using for long before the
it's
Patriots.
A slogan that the team that was at one time the best in the world used to use.
Yes.
Now, they may still use it, but now they just fire their coach every year.
No days off. Now it's Bob Kraft saying it. We're like, dude, you haven't worked at whatever. You haven't worked in 27 years.
Ever since
you married whenever he married his boss's wife, that was the day he stopped punching in.
That was a hell of a move.
Not his boss's wife. His boss's daughter.
Boss's daughter, yeah.
Yeah.
Sailed right past me.
Yeah.
So the Texans spoiled Amy Adams Strunk's little dress-up party yesterday. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's too bad. They had the place all dolled up to look like it was Houston. Amy, there's got to be people. I'm wondering in Tennessee just how people feel about. It's one thing, like lots of NFL owners don't live in the city in which they own the team, but then they don't usually, you know, try to dress it up like that.
Yeah.
Like the Hunt family, I don't know, because they live in Dallas, do they not? They don't try to doll it up like the old Dallas Texans up there in Kansas City and make it look like you're in Dallas. They don't like tease their hair extra high and go out and contract gonorrhea so they can pretend they're Dallas residents.
Right. I mean, they might, but they don't do it to celebrate Dallas. Yeah.
Yeah. Not specifically for that purpose.
Right. I wonder what people think. I hope they keep doing it. You know, I see people, Texan fans, still upset about it. I'm like, they're 0-2 trying this crazy stuff. So let them keep doing it. Who cares? So along those lines,
Amy Adams Strunk is like one of those people that's really bad at playing practical jokes, but they insist. they're like, you should have seen your face. And you're like, all right. Like they pop a balloon next to your head and you're like, what? You look annoyed. And they're like, oh, I got you.
Got you.
Oh.
Did you see? I painted up the whole stadium and made my team dress in that.
got you. Texans.
I love that. All right. So the Texans yesterday, what got accomplished in week 18 yesterday? I feel like there was an overt checklist and then maybe a checklist that came more apparent as the game went on. Now, the first thing, first and foremost, they made Amy Adams Strunk cry. As far as we know. Yeah, thank you, Ben. Yeah, so we touched on that. Her little oiler party got spoiled. They left the game healthy. I think that's a huge thing. To my knowledge, I don't know that there was anybody who got dinged up in that game.
Mechie is the only one I would worry about.
But he was back out there after that.
Yeah, but you never know when the concussion tests. Sometimes there's a delayed response to those things.
Yeah, that was a rough hit, man. He got hit. It got called a penalty. I don't know what the defender's supposed to do in that case, man.
I know. It wasn't like he looked like he was launching himself into it or anything.
Like he was trying to break up a pass, you know.
I wish they would start kind of doing like what they've done with a hip drop tackle this year. There have been fines for hip drop tackles, but maybe one penalty, or there's been several fines for hip drop penalties, but they don't usually call it. They review it afterwards. And I feel like if it's bang bang and it doesn't look like the guy was really like launching himself into him, but whatever.
Yeah, it's so punitive, man. At certain times, that's the thing. Like it's such a for a penalty that oftentimes has like no ill will or intent behind it. It's just,
yeah,
it's the force of gravity and speed at the same time. And like, bam, all of a sudden the drive stays alive because of it.
Well, like the one in the Longhorns game, you know, like by the book, it should have been helmet to helmet. And yet it just doesn't feel like a
that guy kept his head up on that play.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like it's tough. So, but yeah, Mechie is a good one, Seth. He was back in there. So we'll see what the injury report looks like. They're back at practice tomorrow. Because the game's on Saturday. Yet again, another short week. It feels like this whole second half of the season's been short weeks.
I mean, look, it's one of the kind of natural handicapping things that happens in the schedule. Is that you show some success, okay, you're going to play tougher opponents the next year, and you're also going to have your schedule thrown into disarray a little bit.
This short week isn't so much because of success. It's because the Texans always play at Saturday at 3:30 in the playoffs. It's success in that they made the playoffs.
Yeah.
But if they were actually like one of the marquee teams, they'd be playing on Sunday or Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they leave that game healthy. That's number two. All right. Number three, they had a goal to gain some confidence, I think, offensively and wash the taste out of their mouths. Here was D'Amico Ryans. This is D'Amico Ryans on the offensive line.
Right now, coming off the field, anytime you can run the ball the way we ran it, I thought our all lines collectively did a really nice job. I thought pass pro and running the football and rushing, like, guys did a really good job of staying attached on their blocks and giving us the running lanes that we needed to make those plays.
I gave a check mark on this one because I know they only scored 16 points as an offense. Kymie Fairbairn missed an extra point. If Bobby just calls a run down there on the 1-inch line on third or fourth down, I think they score another touchdown in that game. Like that one to me, that the one where Davis landed on his absurdly long neck at the 1-inch line.
Yeah.
And they had the ball third and goal and fourth and goal, and they're throwing low percentage passes into the end zone. I mean, Damian Pierce was cooking yesterday. Like, that was the one where I'm like, just give it to Damian twice. He'll score.
He was cooking. He did have he only had one play that was for negative or zero yardage.
Yeah.
But he did have quite a few 1- and 2-yard runs. He had 2 1-yard runs. Mm-hmm. He had a 2-yard run. He had several 3-yard runs. And when they got down into the goal line area, it looked like a lot of their same old issues on moving human bodies.
Yeah.
I feel better about some of the things they did as run blockers, but I think they're going to have a hard time running against the Chargers. It's still going to be an issue.
Yep. I think the biggest thing in terms of gaining confidence offensively, CJ looked like himself for the one drive he was in there. Threw the ball, nice touch, looked calm. I thought Davis looked pretty calm in the pocket in his three and a half quarters of play that he was in there for. So that was good to see. I don't know that I feel like Davis Mills can win you a playoff game on the road or anything, but I feel like the Texans have a upper-level backup quarterback on the team right now, so there's that.
I guess there's only one throw that I can remember that was kind of dicey, and I want to say it was his first throw that looked like it could have been a pick six. He's trying to push it out to the boundary.
Yep.
And other than that, I mean, he had a lot of errant throws, including one to Deontay Johnson, but it was a serviceable effort. But it wasn't. I'm still a little bit surprised that people thought that was an impressive performance out of Davis. He's had much better games than that.
Much
when he's
better
been a starter,
no doubt, no doubt. In his rookie season, he had better games than that.
Yeah.
All right. The next one on the checklist. This was a big one for you yesterday. I know on the pregame show when we talked about it during the week was get Deontay Johnson involved and get him some touches.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give a buzz on this one. With some caveats, but let's first hear from D'Amico Ryans. What did D'Amico Ryans think of Deontay Johnson in his Texans debut?
Yeah, Deontay has done a really nice job since he's been here. I think he's catching up to speed really well. He had a really good week of practice and made a nice play there today for us. I tried to get it to him a few other times, but it didn't work out. But, man, I'm encouraged by his last week of practice and encouraged by the game today.
Two catches for 12 yards. So on the box score, it didn't look like much. One of the catches, though, was a 10-yard catch on a 3rd and 9, so that's good. He moved the chains. There were two other things I liked. I think CJ probably, that play down near the goal line where Deontay gets a little separation there, I think CJ puts it on him, and that might be a touchdown, the one where Davis kind of missed him. And then I like that they put him back there for one time on punt returns.
And that he didn't fair catch.
Right.
I like that. I like that he had one return for 0 yards because he was looked eager.
Yeah.
Every time they showed him on the sideline, you know, he looked like he was doing all the right things. Body language was good, all of that.
Yeah.
And then I think too, in Deontay Johnson's mind, he probably was thinking, all right, look, they targeted me 4 times. A couple of those times, the deep ball on the sideline, he had separation. Then it wasn't a horrible throw by Davis Mills or anything. It just they couldn't connect. Yeah. So he showed the potential or to be an option there or a weapon. And then the misfire from Davis Mills, like, he was open there too. I think in his mind he's probably thinking, yeah, if CJ's out there, that's me, and I'm gonna have a chance. I'm gonna get some targets in this next game.
Yeah, no doubt. So I was pleased, but the goal was to really, like, you know, get him involved. And he was among the guys that I didn't see him out there a lot in the second half. He was getting he's getting treated out kind of like how you and I suggested he should get treated, which is like, hey, I know he's only been on the team for a week, but treat him like one of your vets on the team because you're going to need what he brings to the table come postseason.
Right, like that first drive, Nico touched the ball 4 times. That's not going to happen on every drive in a football game. No. So yeah, you need guys to offset all of that, and I think Deontay can be that guy.
It turns out I didn't know or maybe even think that this was a goal going into the game, but we knew the numbers involved. We knew that Joe Mixon had 993 yards coming into the game. We knew that Nico Collins had 968 receiving yards coming into the game. And it seemed like it was a goal to get Joe Mixon his 1,000 yards and get Nico Collins his 1,000 yards. Because if you watched the post-game speech from D'Amico Ryans, each of them got a game ball for going over 1,000 yards this season.
Hmm.
So I'm assuming then, I'm thinking like they left Nico in a little bit longer than they left Mixon in there. So I'm assuming maybe that was that milestone was important to them, I guess.
Let's check up on the preseason expectations. I know there are a lot of people clamoring for 3 wide receivers to have over 1,000 yards. Did that happen?
I'm not
a stats guy.
No, we needed some phony yards in the Tennessee game to get one of them over 1,000 yards.
Were they at least on pace at any point to have 3 guys with over 1,000 yards?
They were on pace for 2. Tank was the issue there. They weren't getting Tank the ball very much. So, no, that dream did not come true. You know what, Ben? We'll give a buzz on that one. That dream did not come true. All right, last one, I think, and I think this is a goal for them every week, but play a clean game. And I know, and I'm being a little nitpicky here. They won 23-14. One of the touchdowns was a prayer that Russ Yeast called up from the practice squad.
Poor Russ Yeast.
Love to have back.
That poor kid, man. I know it's his fault and everything, but man, that was going to be a moment for him. You know, his eyes got as big as saucers.
He took it the appropriate amount of hard on the sideline. Like
I know.
10 minutes later, they're going over to him on the sidelines as the game's winding down, and he's the only one on the Texan sideline that doesn't look happy to be beating the Oilers.
it was fun watching the replay of that when Ross saw Ridley, was it Ridley? Streaking across the
that caught the touchdown?
Yeah.
It was Martin. It was the name of the receiver.
Martin streaking across and just like seemingly coming out of nowhere.
Ripping his dreams out of his heart.
Stealing it from him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that play. I like that play because it made me think, yep, they're going to give Will Levis another shot. That's the stuff that dreams are made
they're
of.
They're all suckered in, man. The Colts are bringing back Steichen and Ballard. They're going to run it back with Richardson, maybe the Titans. The Titans have the number one pick in the draft now, so that'll be fun to follow. As far as the clean game goes, the chunk play, they gave up a couple chunk plays. You know, the Ridley play on 3rd and 10 from the 1 yard line, which preceded Derek Barnett's touchdown, so I can't get too angry about that. Penalties were kind of an issue for Laremy, 2 false starts.
Yeah.
6 for 48 yards isn't terrible. Robert Woods, for a veteran, very sloppy with his ball security on that catch. Play by Mills, stepping up in the pocket there.
It was wet and rainy and cold and all of that. I get it. But look, Nico had a fumble on the first drive that the Titans chose not to challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see whether there was a clear recovery on that, so it might not have been a whatever. But then, let's see, Woods had his fumble, Damian fumbled once, and it bounced right back to
him.
That's
right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
John Metchie had that one that was almost a catch but wasn't. Mm-hmm. But I almost, in my mind, look at that as a fumble.
What do you think about Stover going up and high-pointing that ball, but it got knocked away? Was that just a good play by the defense?
Oh, that was just a good play.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't sloppy, whatever it was. It wasn't a ball security
issue. Guy made a play. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the Bobby issues. You know, I thought the two play calls down in goal to go there. The good things the offense did, as you pointed out earlier, they scored on their opening drive. Well, they've done that several times this year. Like, this isn't anything where Bobby gets plus 10 for that, Bobby Slowick. And then a 92-yard run by Damian Pierce. I mean, I guess you drew up that play, but, you know, it's not like that was an 8-play, 92-yard drive where you're just piecing the other team and playing chess while the other DC is playing checkers.
Yeah.
That sequence down near the goal line, like, re-soured me again. I'm like, oh, come on, man, just pound it in.
I guess that's where this is where I get stuck, though, is that I know that the go-to is, okay, criticize the play calling, but they can't run the ball. Like, even what they were doing yesterday, they can't run the ball in short yardage or goal line situations, so... I put back on Bobby as the offensive coordinator because they've not been able to get the run game going for two straight years now. That's where I get in a pinch where I want to criticize Bobby Slowick, but for different reasons than everybody else is criticizing.
I've watched the same run game you have all year, so I agree with you on that. I just thought they were doing some good things. And like Damian, if you take out his 92-yard run, he had 18 carries for 84 yards. You know, he was hitting it at 5 yards. And I know there's an 11-yard and a 15-yard, as you pointed out. There's some ones and twos in there. You only needed one down there. Those are the little things. It wasn't a totally clean game, but I thought they checked off most of the things. The biggest one, stay healthy. And they stayed healthy in the game yesterday, so that was good. All right, we'll do headline. Thank you, Ben. Ben, Gary, our producer, is especially excited about them being healthy. Gear up for the playoffs at Academy Sports and Outdoors. Thanks to our friends at Academy for getting us ready for this weekend. We got our Ready to Roll playoff t-shirts. We got one hanging in the studio here as an homage to the postseason. Division championship hats. You can get all of yours at your local Academy Sports and Outdoors before this weekend. Headlines up next. Not just the Texans, but news around the NFL. The playoffs are set and Black Monday is underway. We'll get to it coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get to headlines. The Texans win yesterday, 23-14, the final score. Here was D'Amico Ryans after the game on what the team accomplished yesterday.
Proud of our guys for back-to-back 10-win seasons, finishing undefeated on the road in our division. Just efforts today by DP, starting with him, to have over 170 yards rushing and a long run. Like, it was really good to see him be productive and make plays for us in the running game. And I thought Davis did a really nice job stepping in. He's efficient, moving the football down the field. CJ, our first drive out, thought he did a really nice job of operating, running the offense, guys operating in an efficient manner. So just proud of the collective effort from everyone. Defensively, Derek Barnett had a big day for us. Get two sacks and to get the fumble recovery for a touchdown. That was a huge play for us. So we had a lot of guys play, a lot of guys made plays, but what I'm most proud of is that guys played our brand of football.
Yeah, D'Amico laid it all out. He just did all our work for us, Seth. He just laid everything out that happened in that game yesterday.
He had, and Derek Barnett, who is being inducted into the Circle of Swarm for this week today, because we screwed up and didn't put him in.
It was all my fault. It was a total oversight last time. Yes.
Yeah, it was my oversight too. But you had the chance to make it right for the sixth selection. You did not. Barnett was single-handedly responsible for three drive-killing series.
He was great
in drive-killing plays in a series. He had a tackle for a loss. He had a sack. And then he had that recovered fumble. I guess you can't say he forced the fumble. Recovered fumble for a touchdown. But with one of the more brilliant runs we've seen.
He put that guy on his ass.
I wonder. But the ball was already out by the time he hit him after the ball was already gone.
Yeah.
It almost looked like he was kind of hitting him. at first almost just out of like, oh, okay, this was a fake, but I'm going to hit him. And then he saw the ball as he was hitting him and picked it up.
Yep.
And then it was just such a nice piece of running. Because he did, you saw he looked to the outside, because usually that's where a cornerback's going to be coming up. But Miles Bryant was too far behind him. And then he just took it from there. Neville Hewitt gave him a nice block, but then didn't get out of his way fast enough, so Burnett shoved Neville Hewitt. And then he had that Mason Rudolph-looking tight end trying to tackle him, or wide receiver.
I think it was Kinsey, number 12. Yeah. He was just hanging off of him, yeah.
Yeah. They had I felt like half of the Titans' skill position players were Mason Rudolph. Every time I saw, I kept thinking there was a fake player or something. Like, why is Mason Rudolph? Oh, no, that's a tight end.
That's a tight end. Oh, that's Wiley. Yeah.
Oh, that's a receiver. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There's all these clunky white dudes out there at their skill positions.
They have the number one pick in the draft, the Titans do, and I'm sure they'll come up with a strategy, probably a poor one for what they do with that pick. But you're right. Their main strategy to rebuild the team should be have less guys that look like Mason Rudolph.
Yeah.
Less Mason Rudolph lookalikes, and now we're going to climb back into this division and get back into the race. You're right. They do have a lot of guys that look like that. It'll be the Chargers that the Texans play in the playoffs on Saturday. The Chargers, by virtue of their win over the Raiders yesterday afternoon. Close game for a little while, and then the Chargers put it on them in the second half. And it'll be the Steelers headed to Baltimore as the sixth seed. Denver, albeit against the backups for the Chiefs, looked very impressive yesterday as the seventh seed. They beat the Chiefs 38-0. And Bo Nix and Sean Payton had a hell of a season this year.
They did.
I think
they did.
Payne and Pendergast, part of being the best show in the world is knowing when to eat a little bit of crow. And I'm willing to eat a little bit of crow on the Sean Payton, Bo Nix exacta in Denver.
There will be no crow eaten. They've got to do something, Sean.
I think they've done enough. Like that. I mean, I had the under on them this season for wins. Yeah. Like, them making the playoffs is enough for me.
I think, honestly, Peyton's work with Bo Nix has been the most impressive thing, because he's, and he still does a lot of raw rookie-type things, but Peyton has really squeezed a lot of it out of him. And for a guy that was kind of out there in the preseason just winging it and freelancing and doing a lot of stuff, remember there was a lot of excitement over Bo Nix in the preseason where you'd watch it and you'd say, yeah, that's not going to fly in the regular season. He ironed a lot of that out of his game, and I think that, like, Sean Payton brought him along at the right speed, and it was an impressive rookie performance.
Yeah, well, and he wasn't, to your point, he wasn't great even at the beginning of the year in the regular season.
Yeah.
I remember reading articles about Deshaun Watson and just how bad Deshaun Watson was, and they'd say, out of 222 quarterbacks since 2000 that have thrown X amount of passes, Deshaun is 221 in EPA per snap or whatever. Bo Nix was in those articles. Like, Bo Nix was down there that low. And now he looks, I mean, he was amazing yesterday. At one point, he was like 23 of 25 for almost 300 yards. He was really, really good yesterday. So the playoffs are set. The big in-season Super Bowl last night for the number one seed in the NFC. Again, another game that was close for a while. And then the Lions put it on the Vikings in the second half. Not the worst version of Sam Darnold, because he wasn't turning the ball over, but the Vikings in the first half of that game had so many opportunities down in the red zone for the Lions, and they kept going for it on fourth down. And Darnold just, man, like, he wasn't seeing the field, or the crowd was distracting him, or we'll give the Lions credit. They were really good in coverage. They were very aggressive in coverage. You know, for an undermanned team going against Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, they were very aggressive defensively, and it worked yesterday. The Lions, that's going to be tough going through that stadium, and I don't care how banged up they are, that's going to be a tough road in the NFC to go through there.
The fact that they've been able to do this as banged up as they are reminds me of the Packers' last Super Bowl run.
2010.
Remember when they had six starters out on defense?
They had like over 20 guys on injured reserve that year.
Yeah. So, the credit to Dan Campbell and that staff.
Yeah.
But it was impressive.
Very impressive.
Yeah, and you're right. Sam Darnold, this is where you start to wonder, like, okay, there's the reclamation project quarterback.
Yes.
And it always looks good when they're on a good team and what have you, but what happens when you get into the playoffs? And in those very, very big moments, is Sam Darnold and his previously punchable face. Is that who you want back there?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Last night, it looked a lot like the old Sam Darnold. So we'll see what happens. But they go on the road. They play the Rams in the first round of the playoffs. Jerod Mayo fired. This happened like right after the game yesterday that the Patriots beat the Bills to essentially forego the number one overall pick in the draft. I don't know where the Pats are picking, maybe third or fourth. Had they lost to the Bills, they would have been picking number one. Right after the game, Robert Kraft puts out a statement saying we're firing Jerod Mayo. The thought, we got a ton of texts in the post-game show yesterday, Seth, when that happened, and a lot of them were like, well, Mike Vrabel's probably looking for real estate up in Boston if he doesn't have some already that he kept up there from being a player. Like, people seem to think that Vrabel is available. It's one of those things where you go, okay, we like Jerod Mayo, but we really love Mike Vrabel, and it's not like it'd be horrible to fire a coach after a 4-13 season.
I wonder if you're Bob Kraft, at some point you gotta start to think, wait a minute, maybe this running it back thing and trying to keep the legacy and lore of the previous Patriots dynasty alive is maybe not the right strategy. And that, okay, whatever I'm thinking, like, and it's impossible not to be affected by your own personal biases and all of that, so you might have to say, all right, look, I don't trust myself, given our grand plan to recreate what we once had, including bringing back a guy that played for that team to coach the team.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a little too close to the situation.
Maybe. Do you think Vrabel, would you not hire Vrabel if you were them? Do you think Vrabel would be a good hire or a bad hire? I totally get your point.
I think he's a good hire in general, but I don't know if he's the right hire for the Patriots.
Yeah.
And because of all of that, it's always just a total crapshoot picking a coach. But I think that Bob Kraft has got to strike out on his own and do it on his own two feet. Bob, it's time for you to grow up.
It is time for you to grow up at age 85 or whatever you are, yeah.
Yeah, be an actual owner instead of just glomming on to Belichick and Brady.
The Colts are welcoming back Shane Steichen and Chris Ballard next year. For that, we thank them. We might even acknowledge the Colts for that. Rockets beat the Lakers last night, 119-115. Amen Thompson, he needs to get suspended for two games all the time, because he comes back. Now, granted, he'd only play a third of the season if he did that. But he came back like a house on fire last night, man.
As did LeBron James, because the Rockets had a 22-point lead early in the game. Third quarter, the Lakers scored, I think it was 40 points in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing, though, is like the offensive rebounding was drastically in favor of the Rockets. It's not like they looked like a non-scrappy bunch or that they got lazy or anything. It was just one of those moments where, okay, LeBron's gonna LeBron, and the Rockets withstood the storm, and it was really, really nice to have Amon Thompson back for it.
23 points, 16 rebounds. Fred VanVleet, a big steal at the end of the game. Alperen Şengün missed a free throw to give the Lakers a chance if they hit a three to tie the game, and they were inbounding the ball. Fred VanVleet steps in, gets the steal, and the Rockets get a win. Man, Texans beat the Titans. Rockets beat the Lakers. I feel like the Astros need to play like a sandlot game with the Yankees or the Rangers somewhere. That was kind of fun yesterday, beating a couple of hated teams for our Houston squads.
I like that you're putting the Titans into the same category as the Lakers.
Just saying
Lakers
it's in terms of hate. You know, like, you're just, yeah, just, you know, it's, I can't, you know, beggars, that's who they play. That's all I can do. Yeah.
I don't hate it's just a different type of hatred for the Titans than it would be for one of those other teams.
Yeah. But
yeah, I get your point.
All right, let's hit the 7 o'clock hour here. Let's relive some of what happened yesterday with the Texans. The good, the bad. And how does it make us feel as we head towards the Chargers game on Saturday? We will acknowledge big performances at 7:20 in a segment we call Acknowledge Me. We'll do all of that coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, when they win, we play the locker room speech from D'Amico Ryans at 7 o'clock. Hopefully we get four more of these. Four more. But this is yesterday. After yesterday's win over the Titans, here was D'Amico Ryans with his football team.
Hey, man, hey, congratulations, man. Heck of a job. Way to finish the season strong right there. Great job. It's back-to-back years of undefeated on the road in our division. Back-to-back years of division champs. Back-to-back years of 10 wins. So great job by everybody in here, man. Great job. Really proud of everyone, as always. Proud of the work you guys put in. now the real season is about to get started. Right now, man, you guys play ball the right way. Love how you guys finish. Excellent job. Now it's time to go hunt. All right? This is what you play this game for, man, to have an opportunity, all right, to go play in postseason football. And we here. We don't know who we're playing yet. We got to see what happens later in the game. But it really don't matter, all right? We get an opportunity in our house, all right? Our house versus anybody who want it, all right? You guys are built for this. We ready for it, and I can't wait to see us play next week. And I'm fired up about the opportunity, ready to get started. Love everybody here. Love the work you guys put in. Hey, man, let's keep taking it up. Keep taking it up another notch, another level, everything you got, right? Win or go home is right here, right now. Let's get it.
All right, so there, that was D'Amico Ryans after the game. He's fired up, man. He's ready. Obviously, at that point, they didn't know what the outcome of the Chargers-Raiders game was going to be. Yeah. Turns out the Chargers are heading into the postseason. I don't know, man. Like, I may come back to regret saying this. I mean, they finished 11-6. They have a better record than the Texans do. The odds makers view the Chargers as the better football team right now. Clearly, they're a 3-point favorite at NRG Stadium. And yet, you know, there's people saying they're going into the playoffs on this high note, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the Chargers, they beat up on the Patriots last week. They beat up on the Raiders yesterday. They blew out two bad teams. Good for them. Both on the road, so that's good. They did get smoked at home by the Buccaneers 40-17, like 2.5 weeks ago. Like,
it was a thorough butt whipping.
Yeah.
The Tampa scored 27 points unanswered in the second half.
Right.
So the Chargers defense is the number one scoring defense. But I think it coming out of Los Angeles, the people would say, all right, yeah, but the defense has kind of showed signs of weakness. They've shown some blemishes and flaws, including in that Bucs game. So it's not like the Chargers are some formidable force that have flown under the radar. They're a wild card team for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly not an unbeatable foe or anything. I'm glad you pointed this out last week because it's true. I think that on paper, the Steelers were probably a better matchup for the Texans, but the Steelers also might have had 35,000 people in the stadium.
Yeah, I didn't want to see that, man.
Yeah, and so the Texans defense, by and large, until the Christmas Day game, had done a really good job in NRG Stadium of turning quarterbacks into the worst version of themselves.
Yes.
So getting Will Anderson hopefully completely healthy and having Danielle Hunter out there and everything else, if you can wash away all memory, just do the Men in Black memory stick thing there.
Yeah.
On that Ravens game.
Yeah.
Because the Ravens are a whole different scenario.
Yeah.
And they weren't able to work their magic against Lamar Jackson at all. But I think that they could get the worst version of Justin Herbert.
For the Texans, the Ravens were an alien. All the other teams were human beings. Some of them really formidable human beings, but they played well against pretty much everybody other than the Ravens at home this year. I mean, I know they lost the Titans game. They had 8 sacks and a pick 6 in that game. The defense did, you know, and then they made Josh Allen and Jared Goff and Tua the worst versions of themselves. I think that's the hope for this game, is that they make Justin Herbert the worst version of himself.
That's one thing that, you know, CJ yesterday said something about how, you know, they've played good teams really well. They just haven't finished the game. And I'm going, that's true in a couple instances. I would say that, you know, the Chiefs, if it hadn't been for everything that had happened in the season leading up to the Chiefs game, I would have been more apt to say, yeah, you know what, they were right there in the fourth quarter. But then they imploded,
and
they knocked themselves out of position when they were down in scoring positions through bad penalties and decisions.
Yep.
So, like that Lions game, the defense picked off Jared Goff 5 times. You lost the game.
Yeah.
That's not slugging it out with the Lions. Mm-hmm. And then the defense, even like the defense had lapses in the second half as well. So it's got to be, like we've been saying all along, if the Texans are going to make a push or a run in the playoffs, they've got to just play out of their brains defensively. They have to have an all-time performance.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that worries me the most is I have always thought they're going to need to be, like even in training camp, like if they're going to win a Super Bowl, they need to be the best version of themselves in the postseason for sure. Like the AFC, it's tough sledding. My concern now is that the best version of themselves just isn't good enough. You know, like even if they... I don't know that their A game is good enough to beat the Chiefs or the Bills or the Ravens on the road. You know, like that's the thing. Whereas I felt in the preseason, what I envision this team looking like, especially offensively, I would have said, oh, yeah, they might even have to come here to beat us in those games, you know? So that's kind of how it went. So yesterday, let's dig into, we dug into the checklist. Let's dig into some of the things that happened yesterday and how much do these things matter as we get ready for the Chargers on Saturday. I would say the opening drive, good to see. I would say that was a nice check mark to have that good opening drive from C.J. Stroud. My level of good I feel about it probably isn't as high as the level of bad I would have felt had it not gone well. But it ended with this, a Nico Collins two-yard touchdown catch.
Third and goal. C.J. back to throw, back in the end zone. Caught Collins! Touchdown, Houston, on the opening drive as Nico goes over 1,000 yards on the season.
Now it's good to see. I like the way C.J. threw the ball. That was kind of opposition agnostic. Like he threw the ball. Well, I don't care who it was against. There were some things that happened on that drive, as you pointed out. You're probably not going to be able to feed Nico Collins five. You know, you're not going to get five touches every drive.
Four touches.
So one run.
One
and
of them
three
was an
catches.
End around.
Yeah. So one run and three catches.
Yeah. Now, yeah, getting Nico involved in the shorter stuff, and then Nico on that blitz was really good to see because they've struggled picking up stuff off the edge this year.
Yep.
And CJ didn't hesitate, got the ball to Nico. Nico probably fumbled the ball, but that's neither here nor there. So that was good. And yeah, I think the fluidity with which CJ played was maybe the most promising.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So that was good. That was the opening drive. Nico again down there deep in the red zone, a target for CJ. That's good to see that they've got a solution.
They had a couple run plays stuffed leading up to that. The Titans were selling out versus the run. Yeah. So I'll credit Bobby Slowick with using play action on that and sucking everybody up to the point where you get the classic, oh my gosh, the best player on the team is uncovered in the end zone.
Yeah, it was funny. Ross Tucker and Jay Feely and Tom McCarthy were like, I don't know what the Titans exactly were doing here. So CJ got out of the game after that one drive. That was good to see. Deontay Johnson, not overly involved, but he did make this play right
Davis now. Calls for the ball. Here's pressure. Mills plants. Mills fires left sideline and caught. Deontay Johnson, first down, left side, 28-yard line. The toe tapper and the sticks move on the pass from Mills to Johnson. No.
So it wasn't a totally empty box score for Deontay Johnson. And look, they're going to need bigger numbers out of him moving forward against better teams. But I was encouraged by some of the movement that I saw out there by him, you know, getting open.
I think he was open multiple times, including the two incompletions to Deontay Johnson. He had separation down on the sideline, and then he was open on the short play down near the goal line, and Davis just had a bad throw on that. So, again, that throw to Johnson might be the one where people immediately after the game, I felt like some people, without really thinking too much about it, thought that Mills had a really good game. And he did not have a really good game. I'm not crushing him for it or anything. It is what it is. He's out there in a glorified preseason game.
Yeah.
I think, Mills has played better games than that before, but there wasn't anything where I thought, oh, wow, this is the version of Mills we've been waiting for.
No. I don't either. I thought he was poised out there. You know, like the numbers don't look great, but I thought he was poised. I thought the play that he hit Woods on, that Woods fumbled, was a really nice job of stepping up, knowing where the line of scrimmage was. The scramble down near the goal line, I almost would have rather he not shown that much moxie down near the goal line, because, you know, if CJ gets hurt, then we're down to, I guess, Keaton Slovis is on the practice squad still. I don't know who the quarterback would be. You know,
I mean, there's nobody in the game. Yeah, there was.
They didn't bring up an emergency quarterback for that.
It would have been CJ just handing the ball off a bunch, or just
wildcat.
Putting somebody back there that they, they would wildcat it.
Yeah. So Mills to Johnson. So that was Deontay Johnson's first catch as a Texan. First of hopefully many.
That's one of the scariest things you'll ever hear on a football field is, like, in the fourth quarter of a preseason game or something like that, when all of a sudden you haven't played since the first quarter, and then the fourth quarter you're like, hey, get warmed up. You might have to go in because a bunch of guys got injured.
Yeah.
no.
Like, I was
not like this.
Yeah, man. I already started drinking.
Yeah, I had 7 hot dogs at halftime.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so next highlight was a good one, man. When Dameon Pierce needs to hit top-end speed, Dameon Pierce can hit top-end speed.
Davis feeds Pierce through a hole, 15, 20. He's gone! 40, 50, the 40 of Tennessee, the 30. Will he be caught? The 10, 5, rock and roll! Damian Pierce, coast to coast.
Wow, like he was shot out of a cannon.
All right, and that was the one. If you're on social media, the team puts out, it seems like one highlight every week that they've got video running on Vandermeer for. And yeah. if you look around hard enough on Twitter, you'll find it, or on Instagram. But Vandy was fired up, man. He was like grabbing the edge of the, they have like an outdoor press box there, you know, where the windows open. He's like grabbing the edge of it. He was fired up. Damian hit that top speed, man. Yeah.
Yeah. The best thing about that was that he had two defenders behind him for like a 2 yard cushion the entire time. And then when he got down to the five, how did he describe it? Oh, he said the Hellcat. What do you say? The Hellcat broke down.
On the postgame show. Yeah.
Yeah. Mike Brown decided to. I guess he was trying to poke at the ball, but it looked like he was pushing him into the end zone.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So he got a little assist from the guy who would be his pursuer.
He did. It was
looks like a point shaving scandal to me.
It's interesting. Yeah, that's right. It's interesting. You know, there's three plays I can think of in Damian's career that were like, he had that big run in his rookie year against the Chargers. He had the kickoff return last year, and then this run here. And even the Patriots run, which is like a 59-yard touchdown. Like, Damian's this compact, you know, like, he's like a low center of gravity guy. But when he hits that top-end speed, man, like, he doesn't run away from people, but he doesn't let people catch up to him either.
Yeah.
He's underrated in that aspect.
The good thing about that play, too, was that, you know, Tunsil got his hand on the backer just right there with the right angle and everything. And so it wasn't like an overly impressive block or anything, but it was the block that needed to be made. The impressive part about that was that compared to earlier in the season, there were a lot of times where Tunsil and whoever was playing left guard wouldn't be on the same page as to how to handle that front. And like a previous left guard might have just left the defensive tackle thinking that Laremy Tunsil was going to overtake him. But there was no hesitation there. Titus reached the tackle and Laremy worked up to the backer and they had a nice seam and it was off to the races after that. So that was, and it was good blocking front side too. Mm-hmm. So that was, yes, more of that, please. And they had on some of the 5 through 15 yard plays in the game, they had some more plays like that where it was blocked up the right way.
Yeah, it was good to see. All right, wasn't all great. 3rd and 10, Titans backed up on their own 1 yard line. This was after the Texans went for it on 4th and goal at the 1, threw incomplete in the end zone. So the Titans are starting at their own 1. They get it to 3rd and 10. And then this happened on 3rd and 10.
On 3rd and 10, Levis in the gun, deep in his end zone, firing deep. Levis downfield right, has Ridley along the sideline. My goodness, inside the Titan 40. Did he make the catch? Yes. Deep shot by Levis, and Ridley gets the completion, good for 38 yards.
And if I remember correctly, D'Amico actually challenged that play.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, because it ended up being just his hip or thigh bone hit right before everything else went out.
I
was happy about that play because I know for a fact that if Derek Stingley were in coverage, it probably would have been an interception.
Oh yeah.
And yet because it was a reception, the Titans might just go ahead and give Will Levis one more shot.
Levis for another year.
Between that and the one we're gonna play a little bit later, that was Levis will get credit from the Titans brass for a couple of things that were just sheer dumb luck by him.
Well, on that play, Ridley went over 1,000 yards for the season, so he got some sort of incentive, you know, $250,000, whatever the normal incentive is.
Yeah.
And the cameras panned over to Levis, and Levis is doing the, you know,
the Johnny Manziel money thing. Johnny Manziel money thing. He was doing the,
he's making it rain, you know, like just shuffling the money off of his hand. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm watching this, I'm like, man, you're 3-13. You're terrible. I get it, you're doing to support a teammate. But, I mean, man, you're Will Levis. Like, stay in the moment. You're still down by 10 in this game, by the way. Like, you're not winning or anything. And appropriately, on the very next, literally the very next play, this happens.
2nd and 5 from the Titan 45.
Next
Pollard
play, 2 plays.
In the backfield, Levis under center. And a fumble here as it's chased down by Barnett at the 30, 25. 20, 15, 10. Barnett still going at the 5. Taking people with him all the way to the end zone. Barnett does it again. His 2nd touchdown of the year. Big guy running and scoring.
Barnett, this is the best thing about Barnett is Barnett's been a machine in late season games in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And yesterday, he had a TFL that was basically a drive killer. He had a sack that was a drive killer. Then he had this recovered fumble for a touchdown. And then after this, he still had another. He had a QB hit on a third and long that killed that play. Like, mm-hmm. he was all over the place in critical moments yesterday.
Yeah, he was. It was great to see. It was almost the exact same situation where when he scored the touchdown against the Cowboys. Because I remember having the same feeling as his touchdown in Week 11 against the Cowboys. That was a game that against a bad team on the road. The margin was 10 at the time, just like it was yesterday. It was 20-10 in the Cowboys game. It was 16-6 yesterday when this happened. And I'm like, man, this felt familiar, because when he scored that touchdown in the Cowboys game, I'm like, okay, they're going to win. Now I don't have to worry about this. It's not a 10-point game anymore. It's a 17-point game. And the same thing yesterday. Like, okay, I don't have to worry about this, you know, because the Titans with the ball and it's a 10-point game. All the backups are in. I probably wanted the Texans to win this game an inordinate amount for a game that didn't mean anything, just because of the, you know, the 10-7 and it's the Titans and all that other stuff. So that was cool. You're right, Barnett. He was awesome yesterday. He was all over the place.
The biggest thing that I guess when you've got, they're all backups out there playing, but the same old issue of missed tackles and then just blown coverages on big plays in the second half,
dude.
Like most of it wasn't because of starters that were out there, but it's the same thing that played the Texans starters versus the Titans the last time they played.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, like I'm watching, I'm going, okay, if Chris Boyd and Russ Yeast are on the field in Baltimore in a divisional round game, I'm like, all right, we're probably sunk.
Chris Boyd will be on the field. I mean, there's not a lot of defensive backs left. Like, there's Yeast, you can play this last play before we talk about Yeast.
Yeah, here we go. This was the last highlight we'll play, and then we'll get to acknowledge me. This was the Titans' other touchdown in the game.
Levis awaits the snap. Here it is.
Our only touchdown.
Levis has time, looking now, pressure, now gunning it long downfield, and caught, touchdown. Oh, my gosh. Amazing reception. Tay Martin plucks it out of the air for six.
Russ Yeast, who's a safety who was called up from the practice squad, God bless him, bless his heart. This was a heave by Levis. I mean, Levis is just he's throwing a glorified Hail Mary. Yeah. And Yeast is parked underneath it, getting ready to catch it like it's a baseball landing in the stands at a baseball game. He's parked underneath it, looking up, getting ready to catch it, and in swoops Tay Martin to snare it away from him and walk into the end zone. So that was the Titans' only touchdown of the day. Is that?
I felt really, really bad for him at first, and I still felt bad for him later, but he did get 836 snaps with LA last year. So it's not like he's a rookie out there just, you know, first time in the NFL.
Which
he's got to know better than that just to sit there like a punt return.
Rams or Chargers?
Rams, I believe.
Okay, so this won't be a revenge game.
Rams.
Won't be a revenge game coming up this Saturday for him, for Russ Yeast. So that was it, man. 23-14, kind of walking back through things yesterday. The good, the bad, and the ugly, and hopefully a lot of good on Saturday when the Chargers come to town. Noon kickoff. No, not noon kickoff. 3:30 kickoff. What am I thinking? It's the playoffs. It's Saturday at 3:30 right here on Sports Radio 610. 12:30 Texans countdown right outside the stadium. Should be nice and chilly from everything that I'm seeing. Bundle up.
Yeah. It's a high of 48 on Saturday.
Oh, did you check it? I haven't checked it yet.
Yeah.
That's not too bad.
No.
It was 30 when I left the house this morning. Screw that. Ugh.
Well, we'll be there at noon for the pregame, so it's not like some of those days where it's not too chilly, but at 9 a.m. it's still kind of, let's see, Saturday high of 53.
Yep.
Ooh, it's balmy.
53 and sunny.
And sunny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good tailgating weather. That's perfect tailgating weather. You just bundle up in the 50s, bundle up just enough.
Yeah.
Hot drinks work, cold drinks work. That's good. I'm happy for all of you that get to tailgate. That'll be good. All right. Let's acknowledge. We do it every Monday. Acknowledge me. We acknowledge the big performances from over the weekend, Texans and otherwise. And let's start with a couple guys we just talked about. They deserve acknowledgement. They got game balls, so why not get an acknowledgement from Payne and Pendergast? The first one is Damian Pierce.
Acknowledge me.
We acknowledge Damian Pierce for his 176 yards rushing yesterday, a career day. 19 carries, buck 76, 92-yard touchdown. Here's D'Amico Ryans after the game on Damian Pierce's performance on Sunday.
The thing about DP is what I always mention for all our guys. Whenever you get your opportunity, it's about what you do with that opportunity, right? And maximizing. And DP, he maximizes opportunities today with the carries that he had, made some really big runs for us. So I was excited. I think our whole entire sideline was excited to see him play the way he's played for us.
So I'll ask you the same question I asked Clint Sterner on the postgame show yesterday, Seth. Does this game yesterday by Damian Pierce matter when it comes to the postseason, or is the decision, as far as volume goes, still going to be just the Joe Mixon show for, you know, 26 carries and everybody else gets two carries?
I think it's still a whole lot of Joe Mixon. I think if anything, it maybe keeps them mindful that, okay, we got to figure out, why were we not able to get Damian Pierce going in the preseason or at any point in the regular season? Should we have been using him more? I think they're stuck in this bind right now where they feel like, well, we'd like to, but the blocking hasn't been good enough to, like, we need Joe Mixon out there every snap that we can to try to get the most that we can out of any given situation. So I hesitate to think, oh yeah, now all of a sudden the Texans are ferocious run blockers. There are too many instances in the game yesterday where they got their asses beat. They had some good. They had more good displays of blocking than they have had on average. But I still worry about the blocking, and especially versus good defenses. The Titans' defense has fallen apart since the last time the Texans lost to them. But I don't think it ends up making a difference in the playoffs. And people will be mad about that, and they're justified, I think, because it just speaks to the entirety of how bad the run game and how inconsistent the run game has been. Even in games where Joe Mixon's had over 100 yards rushing, they haven't been. There's still too many stuffs and tackles for a loss.
Did you see Cam Akers had a 58-yard run last night in that game?
The
Vikings game?
Yeah.
That was tough. I'm good for him. I like him. We met him on a post-game show one time, but that's tough to watch.
They don't know what they're doing in the run game. That's just flat out the. But we'll worry about that whenever.
Derek Barnett.
Acknowledge me!
Derek Barnett, as Seth pointed out earlier, not just a touchdown. He stuffed the stat sheet, man. Tackle for loss, sack, recovered fumble for a touchdown. He had a quarterback hit even after that. Derek Barnett was really, really good. Second touchdown of the year. After the game, we had Damian Pierce on the postgame show. And I asked him to, you know, Damian Pierce, author of now two Angry Run Scepters. He won one for his kick return in the Baltimore game. I said, can you give an Angry Run rating for Derek Barnett's touchdown yesterday?
Listen, he's getting a 10 out of 10 off bat because he's 2 for 2. He's 2 for 2 in big boy rumbles right now. You know, so he's getting a 10 off bat. And then the only thing I could knock him on, is ball security. But then he got the points back when he got into the end zone. You know what I'm saying? As long as you score the football, coach don't care how you got that.
All right, so there you go. I love that.
Wait, what was the ball security issue?
The ball was kind of out there a little bit. I think there was a point in that run where it looked like Barnett might have wanted to lateral it at some point.
I thought that was what was so impressive about it was I think he started off wanting to do the right thing, which is to give it to a speedy guy.
Yeah.
But Miles Bryant wasn't up alongside him yet. Like, to where I think Barnett probably even some. But that part of it was the smart part, too, which was, all right, the corner's usually coming up on the outside. So he looked to the sideline for it. And then when he saw that there was nobody to pitch it to, that's when he did what he had to do, which was just turn into the machine that he is.
Yeah.
Looking like one of those rugby videos where some overgrown 13-year-old is just trucking all these kids out there with no helmets on.
Mm-hmm.
That was beautiful. And that is twice in one season he's had a play that most defensive linemen get once in their career. It's just because he's not. Yes, he's an edge rusher, but he's not like built like a, you know, Miles Garrett type or anything. Yeah. He's a bigger guy. Yeah. He's kind of a combo type of guy. Mm-hmm. And it's, man, they've been impressive runs both times.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was great to see, man.
I got to look him up. I wonder if he ran track in high school or something.
Maybe.
I think he's one of these guys that was was recruited as a running back and then got moved to defensive end.
I mean, he was a first round pick. So obviously, he probably, you know, for his position, did some good things at the combine and whatnot.
He was a two-time Mr. Football at Brentwood Academy.
In Tennessee? Well, there you go. See? And look, he got to do that in his home state yesterday. That had to feel good. No wonder he was so juiced up. That was great. All right, J.J. Watt.
Acknowledge me.
We acknowledge J.J. Watt. Apparently, they gave J.J. Watt the stage to do this yesterday because they replayed the Derek Barnett touchdown on CBS, like, insert highlight style, like they do. Like, hey, let's go back to the studio to JB and the guys for this update. But they did it during the Texans game. Like they split the screen. The Texans game is still going on, and they allowed JJ Watt to throw some shade at Tennessee.
Time to go to New York for an update.
Guys, this must be a mistake, but I'm going to do it anyway. We've got a Houston Oilers fumble picked up by the Houston Texans and ran back for a touchdown. And yes, that does appear to be two times in a row that the Houston Oilers uniforms have been worn against the Houston Texans, and the Texans happen to be 2-0 while wearing them. How about that?
Thank you, JJ, for that history lesson.
So, JJ, so I wonder if that, like he said, this may be a mistake because they're showing a Texans highlight during a Texans game. Or do you think they just, JJ came up with the idea on the fly and like, hey, this would be funny if I did this? And they said,
They either did it on the, or a producer thought of it. This would be a good moment. One thing I noticed about JJ yesterday, I've been monitoring this throughout the season, is how comfortable does he look in his suit and what's the fit like? Because for guys that are freakishly big and lean and muscular, it's actually kind of hard to look good in a suit. Think of like John Cena. Yeah. Like John Cena's got nice suits and everything, and they're tailored, but like it doesn't quite look right because he's such a big guy.
Right.
JJ early in the season still looked a little bit like John Cena. Over the second half of the season, his suits have been fitting him a little too well for him to make a comeback.
Do you think he's thinned out a little bit, or you?
I think he's just whatever the body composition is. He's still freakish, but his suit just fits a little too well.
All right, so it sounds like you are acknowledging the certainty that J.J. Watt is not coming back to play football again.
I'd say there's only a 3% chance that he comes back.
All right, we'll acknowledge the 3% chance.
Acknowledge me!
By the way, let's acknowledge the Jacksonville Jaguars real quick.
Acknowledge me!
They just fired Doug Peterson. Several texts.
They did?
Yeah, they just fired Doug
Peterson.
How
could they? Oh!
Trent Balky's.
Man, you know what? The Colts did the right thing. They're rolling with who they got.
I know.
They're going to try to figure out not just if Anthony Richardson can play quarterback, but if he can stay healthy while doing it. They're going to do it with Shane Steichen and Chris Ballard. They're going to do it without Pat McAfee. And they're doing the right thing. But now the Jaguars got to go and fire Doug Peterson.
Yeah,
thanks a lot.
Yeah, they'll probably fire Balky now, too. Yeah, thanks a lot, Shad Khan. The streak.
Acknowledge me!
The Texans' road winning streak in the AFC South is at 11 now. And yet another game where the Texans were an underdog. They've been underdogs in 8 of these 11 games. Yesterday probably was, in retrospect, probably shouldn't have been. But they were. So now it's at 11, Seth, the streak. They've not lost a division road game since week 6 of the 2021 season. The $100 parlay, mythical, that I made up for this 11 games, if it were an 11-game parlay, would pay, $100 would pay almost $2.4 million right now.
So if I'm going to put this in my file of just in case I ever figure out time travel,
right?
Like to go back and capitalize on it.
Yeah.
If I could go back in time, back to week 11 of 2021, and start betting on the Texans every road game in the division, then I'll have a cool $2.3 million by the end of it.
It's a more fun way to say the chances of this happening are 1 in 24,000, basically.
Yeah.
So that's
You ever seen Nate Bargatze's bit about, like...
No, I don't know who he is.
Yeah, he's a comedian. He's a guy that...
He was part of the Christmas Day stuff on Amazon.
But he's about, like, if he went back in time, he would... he would have no idea what to do with it. You know, like, it was just like, hey, what stocks should I buy? Like, I don't know. Like, I'd have all these ideas. Like, I could tell people about a smartphone and how cool it is. Like, how do you do it? How do I make one? Like, just satellites?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or at the end of the day, I'd be like, I don't know. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah.
That's funny. I'm going to acknowledge the Minnesota Vikings owners here real quick.
Acknowledge me.
They bought up $2 million worth of tickets for around $1,000 apiece for this game that ended up being a big waste of money. They got blown out by the Lions. But they sold them to around 2,000 of their prime season ticket members and partners at $200 apiece. And
at 20% of the normal cost
of what they paid for it,
they were $1,000 a piece, and they sold them for $200.
$200 to valued members of their Vikings season ticket and sponsor community, so that you could have some purple representation in what was largely a blue building last night. I thought that was pretty cool. I wonder if more teams do this. I wonder if more teams like to get at least some sort of advantage or augment the advantage on the road if they feel like, it's $2 million. We're a $10 billion enterprise or whatever.
I wonder how the Lions owners feel about that, or Lions management.
They tried to get the league to step in. Like, they tried to, sometimes they try to get Ticketmaster's a partner of the league. How are you allowing this to happen? That kind of thing. So I think they, if I'm not mistaken, I think they tried to block it, but there were no rules broken, you know?
Right, yeah. The dirty little secret that the owners never really want to talk about is that there's a good portion of season tickets in a lot of places that are owned by actual ticket brokers.
Yes.
So it's like the whole, like, hey, don't sell your tickets to the opponent. You're appealing to the cutthroat business person who doesn't give a damn about whether your team has home field support or not.
That's exactly right. All right, we've only got a couple minutes here. Let's skip down to the last one, Ben. The Duke's Mayo Bowl.
Acknowledge me.
You're acknowledging the Duke's Mayo Bowl. If you're not one of the big playoff bowls, or even that next tier of bowls that I think the Texas Bowl is in, that has good matchups every year, sells their tickets out, big TV contracts, all of those things, then you better have a good gimmick. And the Duke's Mayo Bowl, I think most people have known the gimmick for a while, that the winning coach gets doused in a vat of mayonnaise. I don't know that this was that this had been a tradition, though. They had a mascot there that's basically a big mayonnaise jar, and PJ Fleck was the winning coach. Minnesota beat Virginia Tech in the Duke's Mayo Bowl, and here was the unveiling of who was underneath the, you know, who's underneath the costume of the mayonnaise jar.
We have to unveil the surprise of who's underneath here. Tubby, you want to reveal yourself?
Flava Flav.
Yeah, boy! Flavor Flav in the building at the Duke's Mayo Bowl! Welcome, champions! It's Flava Flav!
That was PJ Fleck. PJ Fleck puts his arm around him and just screams, "It's Flava Flav!"
And then PJ Fleck had a swim cap ready for the occasion.
Yeah.
But he didn't end up wearing it because, I mean, he already, like many good swimmers, he's already got his head shaved bald.
That's right.
And the cool thing about it with Fleck, too, he's one of the better dressed football coaches.
Oh, yeah,
out
he wears
there.
A tie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, he had like a very collegiate, you know, sweater. He has a sweater with a tie underneath and everything.
Yeah.
And he looked like he was all about it. You made a good point. Off air, which is that, man, if Belichick ever gets in this situation, it's going to be the best.
The ACC has a tie to this game. That's why Virginia Tech was in it. If North Carolina wins the Duke's Mayo Bowl next year, it's going to be one of the greatest moments in TV history.
In the Mayo advertising wars, the Mayo wars, which I never would have anticipated. I didn't think that the follow-up to the Cola wars several decades later would be the Mayo wars.
Right.
I mean, Hellman's and Duke have gone in. They're going hard in the paint with their advertising spends.
Yeah.
Except that Hellman's went in huge with Will Levis, benched quarterback.
Yes.
And the Duke's Mayo Bowl is becoming a mainstay of the culture of college football.
It is. Yeah.
The only thing I would say is that I think that when they dump the mayo, The viscosity of the mayo doesn't look right. I think they add some water to it or extra vegetable oil or something.
Oh, really?
To make it pour better.
Yeah.
It came out almost like Gatorade on them. I don't think that's a good visual for it. It's not how I want my mayo to look. When I douse you in mayonnaise, it's partly the thickness and the resistance is part of the fun of it.
It's why I let you do it. Yeah. I love the thickness of
watery mayo dumped over your head.
I'd be so mad if it was watery mayo that you dumped on me. So yeah, there you go. Duke's Mayo Bowl, man. I tell you what, Hellman's did hit it big with that. The Mayo Game Day Be Delicious slogan, though, is pretty good. That's pretty fun.
I've wanted to ask Ross about the Mayo Wars, but I'm guessing because when Ross Tucker comes on, it's sponsored by Hellman's.
He'd be biased.
I tweeted that out yesterday that I think that Ross Tucker has become one of my favorite color commentators. And I'm biased, obviously, because we know Ross. And yet, it's not like he wasn't my favorite color. He wasn't one of my favorite color commentators before. I think he's really grown into the role.
He's really good in games like yesterday. Or like the Chargers and the Patriots a week ago that was 40-7. And that I got a thought on that. We'll get to that. It's also Black Monday, and guys are getting fired, including in the division. Let's dig into that as well coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. I got to get to my Ross Tucker theory in just a second.
Sorry.
What's so funny?
I was shuffling through my old mail, and by that old mail, I mean the mail from a month ago that I haven't opened yet.
Yeah.
And I had a letter from the IRS requesting documentation for my 2022 tax return that needed to be replied to within a month, and I just now opened it.
Okay, so where are you?
32 days after.
Is there a grace period?
After I received it, yes. So I'm now in. It's not a big deal. I have the documentation, but I'm gonna have to.
They didn't
send it registered or anything. I was like, whatever. I thought it was one of those. I don't know. Social Security statements.
Sorry. My mail needs to be registered if I'm going to read it, okay? That's funny. The news right now in the coaching community is the Jags have fired Doug Peterson. Have not seen any news about their GM, Trent Baalke, in Jacksonville, but the rumor has been that he's going to be gone. He should be gone. Like, they both should be gone. The Giants, I'm curious if you're surprised about this, Seth. Giants are retaining Brian Daboll and general manager Joe Shane.
I am surprised, Sean. Because Shane has seemed like the master at perhaps displacing blame. He seems like a master politician in the way he manipulates his owner. And I know most of this just from the Hard Knocks and watching the actual interaction. I don't require sources or anything. I recognize a smooth talker when I see one. And he's smooth talking poor John Mara all over the place.
Your source is your Max subscription. That's your source for this.
So I guess the surprise would be in that I guess that Joe Shane likes Brian Daboll. And because I think if Joe Shane wanted Brian Daboll to be the scapegoat, he could have made him the scapegoat. Mm-hmm. And I think John Mara would have been putty in his hands.
Yes.
So it must mean that Daboll and Shane are, when they had their conversations about Daniel Jones, I'm guessing Brian Daboll saw upside in Daniel Jones, and maybe that if he didn't, then there would be a whole lot of told you so. Yep. Oh, thanks a lot, Shane. And then Daboll would probably be gone right now. So at the very least, I think they are acknowledging that they whiffed on Daniel Jones.
We both screwed up here.
Yeah.
So the Giants are retaining their coach and GM. I guess the other ones to watch at this point. We're kind of running out of jobs where I think there's a hardcore chance a guy could get fired. The Giants were the last one. I think the Cowboys obviously are one to watch because they have been all year and they were a disappointment.
Well, and he's not even a firing. He's just not under contract.
That's true, yeah. He's a free agent now. He can go somewhere else if he wants. There's been more talk about McCarthy ending up with somebody else's job than going back to the Cowboys. That's a great point. Yeah, so that's
Jerry
not even
Jones,
firing.
It's weird that Jerry Jones will make so many decisions that seem like they're either impulsive or guided by money or whatever else. But then at the same time, he does the exact opposite of what you would expect from a guy like that, is he just waits and waits and waits to make a decision. So I could see McCarthy kind of being in limbo until the league year begins. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, you can't go interview for anybody, can't do this, can't do that.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the Cowboys won't be searching for a head coach. And then all of a sudden, the league year will begin and Jerry Jones will say, you know what, we need a new head coach.
Oh, they get a new one, yeah. And you will not have the pick of the litter in March either. The only other ones I can think of, like the Raiders, they play pretty hard for Antonio Pierce, but that feels like one that if they're going to draft a quarterback, maybe just start over there. Like
where are they in the draft order right now?
They finished 5-12, I think. So they're probably somewhere in the between
bad
5
move.
And 10. Yeah,
bad move.
Yeah, it's
man.
A rough place to be. And then the Falcons. You know, I don't know what the thought is there. You know, clearly they've shifted gears over to Michael Penix. Raheem Morris is a defensive head coach who's on his second run there. You know, who's coached in Tampa Bay, kind of flunked out there. Like, do they look at Michael Penix? Are they a team that would say go after Ben Johnson to pair him with Michael Penix, and then that's their, because that's a division that is gettable over the next few years. You know,
yeah.
Like you make the right head coaching hire, you might be able to snag that division.
I think the thing with the Raiders to watch, perhaps or potentially, and this is nothing but speculation at this point, yeah. But I mean, Tom Brady is a minority owner
Good
in that
point.
Team.
Yep.
And I don't think he wants to be a coach. It seems like he's got just a lot of worldly interests that are kind of just cut off at the knees when you're a head coach. But I could see him wanting to be more involved. And this would be the perfect opportunity for him to step into some kind of an executive or management role.
Maybe, yeah.
Overseer. The Raiders are picking sixth.
Okay.
In a year where there's not really any quarterbacks that people are super excited about.
Yeah.
That would be interesting to how much the Raiders might request it of him too.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, you want my theory on Ross Tucker on why he may be too good for his own good?
Yeah.
He makes these unwatchable games watchable. I'm with you. Like, I thought he was awesome yesterday. I thought he was fantastic last week in the Chargers blowout win over the Patriots. Like, he's very entertaining. Amy loves him. Like, tweeting stuff he's saying. I'm like, she definitely likes Ross more than she likes me as a broadcaster, for sure.
He's tall, as his broadcast partner pointed out yesterday.
Ross is like, yeah, that is true.
It's been documented.
Here's the problem. And there's a wrestling thing that goes with this. There are wrestlers sometimes who are so good at making the stars that aren't very good at the technical stuff look good that they never become champions themselves. They're always there just to make the high-level marquee guys look good. Ross could be so good doing these D and E level games, making unentertaining games entertaining, that CBS is like, well, we can't bump Ross up because he's the reason why people are watching these crappy D-level games in Week 16.
It's, you know what? I always
almost
felt
too
like
good for his own good.
That, you know what? You know what would need to happen is somebody out there. Now, a lot of these network executives, you got to remember, they're actual morons. Like, some of them are, like, the decision when it comes to actually understanding or knowing what's good and what's bad or what have you, they're actual morons.
Super horny too, according to some lawsuits out there.
It's okay to be horny. It's how do you express it in the workplace?
Just
that's
saying.
The issue. The, right. It's the horniness isn't the issue.
I interrupted
it's how
you.
What you do with the horniness. So the I've learned. So the so many sessions with the IR. So with the HR. So Kevin Harlan and Ross Tucker together are a lot of fun.
Oh,
and I think Harlan really appreciates Ross and his ability to talk football, but also to have fun. The problem with Harlan is he's also so good at what he does that I honestly think it keeps him from being at the apex.
It's the same
because
thing.
He likes to, okay, I'm going to do a basketball game tonight, then I'll do a baseball game tomorrow, and then I'll do an NFL game the next day. And I wonder if Harlan has turned down some opportunities at times for some of the marquee spots because he just enjoys doing everything so much and he's so good at it.
I'm confused. But are you saying maybe we don't want to be the best in the world anymore?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
No, because in our genre, and especially the way everything has evolved, all you got to have is a following.
Yeah. Good. All right, we're done. We're out of time.
Seth, why?
Antibodies to you. Yeah, John Harrison, Mark Vandermeer, they're up next. But first,
antibodies and a best in the world, but not too best in the world to you.
Thank you.